Chicago, the grudge matches on the gridirons might be gone, but get ready to hit the ball and touch them all at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the real MVPs of SUVs. If you're thinking about rounding third and heading for home in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step and batter up. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to win the game like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate the nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. And this is our biggest sale ever. Buy a new air conditioner or furnace and get 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Plus, Four Seasons guarantees to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000, guaranteed. Call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Mike D'Antilio along with Charlie Long. We'll have Steve Geller join us in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to tell everybody at 5:20, we'll have on the legendary Drew Brees will join us. Drew's got a new adventure that he's promoting here in the city. And we'll also get to talk to him for the first time about Tyler Shuck, Saints draft, and his outlook for the 2025 season. So Drew Brees will be on with us at 5:20 this afternoon, a little after 4:20 this afternoon. We'll have on with us Glenn West from Go247 covering LSU to talk about the upcoming baseball series with Arkansas, and that's certainly a big one. And also a little bit about additions to the LSU roster via the transfer portal. And at 4:40, NFL referee from Louisiana himself, from on the bayou, Jason Ledet. Jason will talk about basically kind of his rise up the ranks from the high school ranks to colleges, now refereeing in the National Football League. And, Charlie, that's a position not a lot of people got their hands up they want to do. And so you catch some abuse as a referee. And so we'll have Jason to come on to talk about his rise, some of the things that they go through as far as training referees and that sort of fashioned getting angles. And he's talked to me numerous times about it, along with Carl Johnson, who's also from my neck of the woods, about being in the right angle to make that call out on the football field. Charlie, a big trade, you brought it up, and this is not a surprise to me because of the fact when the Steelers acquired DK Metcalf, I said it here, the days with George Pickens are going to be limited. They weren't going to have both of them on the same football team. They just didn't get the right kind of value in trade. And today, finally, they agreed upon it as the Steelers acquired the Cowboys' third-round pick in 2026 and a fifth-round pick in 2027 in exchange for George Pickens. He's got 1 year left on his contract, which is worth $3.6 million. He's looking for $30 million a year. And they also get a 2027 sixth-round pick for Pickens. Back when he came out in 2022, he was legit for me. He got a first-round pick grade from me. I watched him from high school to his college exploits at Georgia. He was a big receiver that scared the bejesus out of you every time he hit the field. You know, he's legit. 6'3¼", a little over 200 pounds. In high school, he was a dominant player at Georgia, despite missing most of his junior season with an ACL injury. Came back a little bit later. In 24 games, he caught 90 passes for 1,347 yards, and 14 of the 90 catches were for touchdowns. So he averaged basically, it's a little under 15 yards a catch, 14.9, but you saw the big play ability with him. He has the ability to contort his body so many different ways to get up, to catch a pass between arms and hands. And he has physically got what you're looking for in a wideout. In the NFL, in the three seasons, he's caught 174 passes. He's averaged 16.3 yards a catch, and he's caught 12 touchdowns. The problem is this was part of his makeup as a high school player at Georgia with the Steelers. He lets his emotions get way out of hand out on the field.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he is a live wire and no insulation. And he has let that get himself in trouble. He is a bit of a talker, and I don't mind that. Yeah, man, you can play. I don't mind the talking. It's some of the other things that he'll do, sometimes not respectful to other teammates, screaming he wants the football. We heard Mike Tomlin at the end of last season make the comment, he's got to grow up, he's got to mature, because he has got all the talent in the world to be a big-time player. Will the maturity level hit with him? I'm not real sure. But what the Cowboys acquired was a big-time talent who's got some issues, and not necessarily, say, off-the-field stuff. It's between – it's on the grass.
Yeah.
It's where he loses control. He loses his temper. We've seen him pick fights, pull some guy's face mask, kind of give him the business when they're on the ground, and constantly complaining he's open. Now, as a guy who's done this for 40 years, there ain't a lot of receivers who don't tell you they always open. He's one who tells it to you real loud. So it's a gamble by the Cowboys because it's really a one-year deal. Now, he's got some motivation now to become a big-time player, and you suit him up alongside CeeDee Lamb. He ain't seeing a lot of double coverage. And this football team with the Cowboys, their rushing attack, it ain't nothing to write home to mama about. They're going to be throwing the football and using George in a lot of these wide receiver screens where he can use his 6'3+ frame, break a tackle, he takes off downfield. He's not one step fast. He's two steps fast. But, man, he's a talent. And if he could ever sort of corral all that energy and that kind of pilt-up rage sometimes he has and be a more focused player, you got something. Problem is, Mike Tomlin said, enough's enough. Hey, he's somebody else's deal to mess with at this stage.
Yeah, and if Mike Tomlin can't get it out of you, I don't know what, like, who can in the NFL. Mike, a couple things here, because I want to throw a bunch at you, so just take it one step after the next. The fit on the football field is awesome, because it gives CeeDee Lamb still the flexibility to move inside to the slot or outside on the boundary opposite of George Pickens, because Pickens is a boundary receiver. He's a guy that's going to take the top off the defense, get behind a DB, and make a contested catch. He's fantastic at it. A couple things with the Cowboys trading for him, you're going to have to pay him. Now, the $30 million asking price, I don't think they're going to reach, because they already are paying CeeDee Lamb $34 million average annual value on his current contract. But something maybe similar to what T. Higgins got, right, as a wide receiver too, because that's what Pickens is in this Cowboys offense. He was a wide receiver one in Pittsburgh, but CeeDee Lamb's a top five wide receiver in the NFL. You're a wide receiver two in that type of situation. Higgins signed for about 28.5 million average annual value on his most recent contract with Cincinnati. I could see something like that happening there. And it makes sense as far as Pittsburgh goes, because they already made the trade for DK Metcalf. They effectively picked DK over George Pickens because they extended him when they made that trade with Seattle as well. So the money side of it's really fascinating. On the football field, I think it's a great fit for the Cowboys offense. They didn't get Tech McMillan, who, you know, bunch of reports were saying that they were interested in the top wide receiver in this past class. He goes to pick 8 to Carolina, so they don't get a chance at him. So they had to fill that wide receiver 2 hole some way. They give up a 3rd-round pick, a late pick swap in 2027, and they get Pickens. But now it's going to be the question of what kind of contract is he going to get in Dallas. You know, we'll have to see.
Charlie, I don't know. You best be the one to break him that he wants T. Higgins money. Because, you know, he doesn't look at himself that way at all. I get what you're saying, but he looks at himself, okay, if CeeDee Lamb is 1A, I'm 1B.
No.
And I want to get paid $30 million a year. That's what I wanted the Steelers to pay me. That's what I want another team to pay me. I think maybe he's going to try to bank on a big year.
No, for sure.
I really think he's going to bet on himself and say, Dak's going to get me the football. And I'm banking on myself that I can put up huge numbers, and I don't have to convince 31, well, maybe 30 now because you ain't going to convince Pittsburgh, but I can convince one of the other 30 teams to pay me that kind of money.
And he might have a huge year in this offense as the wide receiver too because CeeDee Lamb takes so much attention, but he's not on CeeDee's level. Like, I like George Pickens as a player, but he's the clear wide receiver too. I like T. Higgins as a player. But he's the clear wide receiver, too, to Jamar Chase. It's a similar situation.
Charlie, one thing the Cowboys always do, they make it interesting to watch.
Yes, they do.
Because how's, you know, one thing with CD, he's really not a big complainer about anything. You know, he might every once in a while yipe, but he's really not. Man, George Pickens, all I'm telling you is he's constantly complaining that he wants the football. Now, he's immensely gifted. No question about it. But how that mix is going to happen, they're fortunate they got Dak Prescott because Dak is always the calming force behind all this swirl of a tornado with an owner that's constantly interfering. Now you got a first-year head coach. Where's your running game with the Cowboys? Man, thank goodness that they got Dak Prescott because he one thing can do very well. He can calm the situation down in the huddle, but this may really test his patience as a quarterback, having to deal with George Pickens if, you know, CD's getting 12 catches and he's getting 4. There might be some explanations on that. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line from Go 247, covering the LSU Tigers, football, baseball, basketball. Man, he does it all. Glenn West. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, guys. And honestly, thank you for putting me in the same guest lineup as my childhood hero, Drew Brees. It's quite the
it's pretty cool, man.
Quite the honor. Quite the honor. I'm glad I'm getting mine over with first, though.
Well, you're in the lineup, Glenn. Hey, man, that's what counts, baby. You're in the lineup.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Glenn, before we get into the LSU-Arkansas series, a big pickup for LSU over the weekend, and I know we've talked about it before, that this is a team that had to add another piece in the secondary, especially at safety, and bringing in A.J. Halsey. I was telling Charlie yesterday because I didn't know if he would come out or not, because he's actually 3 years in college. He spent the first year at New Mexico and then two at Houston. There was some rumblings that one way or another, he was not going to be back at Houston. So he may declare early for the NFL draft. So I've done my kind of breakdown on him, and he has played both free and strong safety. And you add him to the mix along with Tomarcus Cooley, who they brought in from North Carolina State, Mansoor Delane, who they got in from Virginia Tech. All of a sudden, now I'm not sure where Delane's going to play, if he's going to be your outside corner, nickel, or safety. But now all of a sudden, the real question mark has been answered. Now hopefully everybody can stay healthy, but do you think A.J. Halsey, he's the guy, he walks on campus, hey, you're the starter. I know everything's about competition, but for me, having watched him at Houston, he's a starter for LSU.
I think you're right on the money there. I think he is a plug-and-play starter. And I think when you looked at kind of the two positions that LSU could potentially target in the portal cycle this spring, defensive tackle certainly came to mind, and then safety was probably the other position that if the right fit came along, LSU would jump at the opportunity. And they did a really nice job by bringing in Bernard Gooden, who's a top 50 player on our 24/7 Sports Services in terms of the defensive tackle position, a top five player at that position, and then getting A.J. Halsey in here as the last pickup of the cycle is a tremendous add at this stage for LSU, because I think you're right. I think he gives you some more confidence now that the secondary is in a much better spot here going into the fall. Somebody I think can plug and play at safety, and you can kind of mix and match around that. You know, I think there were some chatter for a lot of the offseason, and it still could wind up being true that Delane could move to safety at some point this fall or some point this offseason just to try to get some reps there. But I think now that you brought in Halsey, you've seen a couple of the younger guys in the program, guys like Deshaun Spears, Tomarcus Cooley, certainly from the transfer portal, those guys have pretty solid spring camps. I think that you can now feel pretty safe with Delane at corner, and I think that's probably where he ends up for most of the snaps this fall. But he's certainly got that versatility to his game as well. So I think what Halsey really does is he gives you a veteran guy back there, a short tackler, somebody that is something that LSU has struggled with in years past, if we're being quite honest, at that position. So getting a physical, strong tackler at that spot, whether it's at free or strong safety, whatever way they end up going with him, I think it's a huge, huge piece for LSU to kind of round out this defense. And really, if you look at the rest of the transfer portal pieces that they brought in this fall or going back to the winter, I would imagine most, if not all, those guys wind up being either starters or really big-time contributors to the defense this year.
We haven't heard a lot about Jakeem Jackson. Maybe give a little update on Jakeem. He came here also, highly regarded cover cornerback from Florida, and certainly somebody that Corey Raymond knows a little bit about. And so
yeah.
You think about, you've got the number one rated cornerback in the country, and I'll be honest with you, finally got to see him up close and personal. He's legit 6'3 plus. I sort of questioned if he really was that tall. He is that tall. But a little bit about Jakeem Jackson, who they brought in, and where do you see him fitting in here at LSU?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Jakeem was a top three corner a couple of years ago, a couple of recruiting cycles ago. So he was obviously very highly recruited, wound up at Florida with Corey Raymond, and just missed a lot of last year with an injury and kind of went out early in the season, didn't get a chance to see kind of his development in year two. But everything that we had read and heard was that he was making some really giant leaps there in year two in Gainesville. So Raymond makes the transition over to LSU, brings over Jakeem Jackson a year later. And, you know, this spring he's mostly been running with the twos. I think he's had some a few first-team reps going back to the spring, but somebody that I think will absolutely factor into that rotation. I'm a big DJ Pickett guy. I think he's going to be a real star for LSU in his first year. You still have got Ashton Stamps and P.J. Woodland, who played a lot of snaps for you last year. But I really like what they did in the cornerback room by bringing in first Jakeem Jackson and then Monster Delane to kind of round that group out. I think that they're going to be as talented, as long, as versatile in their coverage as we've seen to this point since Brian Kelly arrived at LSU at that position. So I can't sit here and say that Jakeem's going to be a game one starter, but he'll certainly factor into that rotation, and I would imagine plays a good amount for LSU this fall.
Glenn, hopping to the diamond, a top 10 SEC showdown at Alec Box Stadium this weekend, Arkansas coming to town. And just a couple notes on it, like Steve and I were hosting the show last Thursday, and the first game against Texas was that day, and we see Zach Root just completely shut them down. The Arkansas ace goes 8 innings, allows 2 hits, 12 strikeouts against the number one team in the country in Texas, and they just blitzed them offensively. So this is like, I'm watching this game. Arkansas had lost 3 straight SEC series up to that point, and they just annihilate Texas, the number one team in the country, who was 19-2 in that first game, and then all of a sudden it turns into a sweep, and Arkansas is back on the map. I know that D1 has them ranked number 7. Jay Johnson had a really funny comment that was just like, what are they watching? This is one of the best teams in the country. They should be number 2 or number 1. And I want to get your thoughts on Arkansas, just because it's a scary team that's coming in red hot to Alec Box Stadium after an impressive showing against Texas.
Yeah, welcome to the SEC would be my response to some of that. I mean, anybody can be beaten on any given weekend in this conference, it seems like. And certainly Arkansas has been one of the more well-rounded teams, I think, in the conference. I think you could make an easy argument that they are the most well-rounded team LSU's played to this point in the season. When you combine pitching and hitting, they're a top 3 pitching staff in SEC play. They're, I think, the number 1 hitting team in SEC play. And that's kind of been the program's bugaboo, I guess, over the last several years, is that they've always had the elite pitching, but maybe not always the consistent batting. That's not the case this year. They are a very, very dangerous team, and LSU coming off of a big-time series loss at A&M, they're going to have all their P's and Q's in order, especially at the plate, because you mentioned it. Root's a really phenomenal talent at pitcher. They have several other guys that they can mix and match with. So it's going to be a real interesting series here, because I think as you look ahead to what this schedule offers over the next couple weeks, I think LSU still has all of its goals out in front of them, but they have to win these next 2 series to really secure that top 8 national seed and be playing at the road to Omaha, having to go through the box at both the regional and super regional level, I think is very important for this team.
Yeah, that's a great point. I wanted to just throw it out there as well, because D1 had their most recent Field of 64 projection, and they had LSU as the 4th seed right now. The season had ended today. I know that it's different from the committee and everything like that, but it's interesting to see that projection, because you have the series against Arkansas this weekend and then the series against South Carolina on the road next weekend before you get to Hoover. And it's a different, format in Hoover as well this year, which is pretty interesting as well. But what is kind of that magic number you think for LSU to feel safely in the top 8 national seed? Like you mentioned, having the home path to Omaha.
Yeah, I believe they're at 15 right now, 15 wins in conference play. If they're able to get up to 19 wins, I think that really secures their spot as a top 8 national seed, really, no matter what happens in Hoover at the SEC tournament. If they were to drop one of these final 2 series, I think you'd have to get some work done in Hoover to make sure that you're a top 8 kind of team. But I really like what they've done to this point in terms of setting themselves up, even with that A&M loss where you kind of had it down there to your final 4 outs of winning that series. Still to get out of there with one, I think was, you know, kind of keeping your hopes afloat there. But this is going to be the big litmus test for them, because their offense has been very up and down for the better part of a month now. It's been kind of hard to figure out from an outsider's perspective. I'm sure Jay Johnson has been staying up late at nights trying to figure this out too, because they have really talented hitters and they've have guys that have shown that they can hit in conference play in their careers. But right now it's those returning pieces, those you know, Jared Jones, Stephen Milams, Michael Braswells of the world, Josh Pearson's. Those guys are kind of struggling a little bit at the plate right now, and they've got to get some more consistency there to be the kind of team they want to be in postseason play.
Glenn, you know what drives, I got friends of mine live next to me. They are huge baseball fans. They were like, man, we're getting the home runs. Nobody's on base. Okay, yeah. It's the one-run homer. It's like, come on, if they had people on base, I mean, I'd feel much better about it. But you're right about it. I think the inconsistency. And last time we had Coach Johnson on last Thursday, he sort of brought that up, that there's some work here to be done with being a more consistent hitting team. And he felt as though that was a key down the stretch for LSU, not only once you get into the SEC Championship Series, but also beyond.
Yeah, it's kind of a complete reversal of what we saw early in the season. And I know it was non-conference play and you weren't facing the elite arms week in, week out, but this offense was very consistent for LSU for the first couple months and even the first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of SEC play. It's really been this last month or 5 weeks here where they've just been very inconsistent at the plate. They're getting out early in counts. You know, one of the big bugaboos, I think, for Jay Johnson is that they get hits, but the runs don't really reflect the amount of hits that they're getting, and I think that just directly revolves around them not getting enough guys in scoring position and then not coming up with the clutch enough hits to pull away in some of those games. So certainly some things to figure out here over the last couple weeks of the regular season. We'll see how sharp this team can get going into postseason play, but once we reach postseason play, you kind of go back to zero, and you got to hope that your team is in a really good spot, headspace wise, and certainly consistency wise, on offense and on the mound.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always great stuff. Appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Say hi to Drew Brees for me.
All right,
thanks, Glenn.
All righty, Glenn West from Go247.com. They do a great job covering all aspects of LSU athletics. When we come back, we'll have on with us Jason Ledet, NFL referee, going through his journey as being an NFL referee, and also some of the things that you look for and that they train in on becoming a better NFL referee. Right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, handling things behind the scenes, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from the Bayou. Now he's an NFL referee now, Jason Ledet. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Finally get to see you this past Monday. We got schedules that are similar. We all over the place. So good to see you Monday, and great to talk to you this evening.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for having me on. It was good to see you out there on the golf course, and it was a great day. Glad to be with you.
Jason, before we get into kind of how you got into the refereeing world, we've had a texter, and he's asked a number of different times about this, about how much training you do. And I think it's really kind of built off of something Carl Johnson said with us a year ago about positioning and getting in the right position to make a call and how important it is. And after a game, how much time do you guys spend looking back at the tape of that game that you just had and say, man, you know, I maybe missed this here. I wasn't in the right spot for it. So talk a little bit about how important positioning is out on the field and after a game to go back and look at kind of maybe, because we all human, we all going to make some mistakes in this world. Sure. It's not going to be 100%. But to go back and look at, maybe I could have got a better angle on that.
Right, and you bring a good point, Mike. You know, one thing in the officiating world we talk about is having strong mechanics. Mechanics is your positioning, basically, how to be in a great position to see the play, because it happens fast. Our eyes got to be trained to see the ball, to see the catch, to see the foot at the sideline. And you don't just do that by getting up on a Sunday, putting on the stripes, and going to do the game. So a lot of training in the off-season. Right now we're in the off-season. We're about to get cranked up. It'll be my year three coming up. So this past off season, I've been training in the gym, doing some test questions, watching film, going back and watching last year's film, watching my mechanics, watching my calls, and seeing if I can be in a better position. Some things that the average fan may not see is the official in the right position. But as officials, we know whether we could have been a little bit more to the left, a little bit deeper, a little bit to the side, so we can have a better angle to make that call that's maybe happening at the sideline or the goal line. So definitely mechanics, when we look at officials coming in from high school into college, we look at their mechanics. We see how they look in uniform. Are they athletic looking? Can they move? Can they run? Can they backpedal? And are they still when that play comes to them? Because having a ball in the air and a catch, you want to be backpedaling, but you also want to break it down and try to have steady eyes so you can make an excellent call at that moment.
Man, you sound like you're doing as much film work as I do with all this. Yeah. Looking at what you got to look at, kind of breaking it down, making that right call in the position of being that referee. Jason, tell everybody a little bit about kind of how you got started in the refereeing business and your work up from the high school level to college and now into the pros.
Sure, yeah. I went to St. Charles Catholic High School, played football, and got a scholarship to Nicholls State. Loved the game of football. And then I work here at Thibodaux Regional Health System now. But at the time, I was just still missing the game. So I had a buddy of mine. I was at the gym one night, 1997, the same year I got married. So that's how I keep track of the number of years I officiate. He invited me to a local high school meeting. And so I went and then fell in love with officiating. I did high school for about 6 years and then started applying to the Southland Conference. Southland Conference invited me to McNeese State University for a scrimmage. I went out a few months later. I got a 3-game schedule the first year. Got into the Southland Conference full-time, had some success in playoff games. And then the Big 12 actually came in and took over the Southland as a minor league program for us. So when the Big 12 officials moved on or retired, they would bring in Southland officials up. I was able to work the Big 12 for 12 years. And at this time, that's when the NFL scouts, they come out to the games and they start critiquing certain officials. Now, you don't know they're out there. You work your game and then the NFL finds you. They go through a vetting process, a background check, security check. They call your friends. They call your coworkers. They try to get as much dirt they can on you to make sure when they bring you up that we have people that are high quality people that we bring in. And so that's been my journey through the Southland Big 12, and then I'm entering my third year into the league, which I'm very excited about.
Okay, did my cousin Tim coach you at St. Charles, or you have Frank Monica?
I had Tim Dettillier, and then Frank Monica recruited me when he was at Tulane.
Okay. Gotcha. So you got both worlds of that St. Charles Catholic on that part of it.
Right.
One of the things, Jason, that I think we see a lot more of than maybe in years past is the offensive pass interference call. Man, growing up, that was a rarity. And same with you. You didn't see that much at the collegiate or at the professional level. But there's much more of an emphasis on that rule today than ever before, in my opinion, and having, you know, I'm 60-something years old, so I've never seen it called like it is today.
Yeah, you definitely see changes, but it's still a league that they want to see points. They want to see offensive explosion. And so when you have an offensive pass interference call, that kind of brings it back, brings the air out of the balloon a little bit. But, you know, we do look for certain indicators for offensive pass interference where we look for gaining separation versus creating separation. And sometimes these big receivers, they'll gain gain separation just because of their size. It might be a 6'4 receiver going against a 5'9 defensive back. But, you know, creating separation, which is what you typically see is the push off at a top of the route, and then he turns and catches the ball. Those are the big ones we want to get. The rules for offensive pass interference and on the NFL and college are slightly different too. So sometimes, you know, people get confused when they're watching high school ball on Friday versus Saturday versus Sunday, that some of the rules are different, but there is an emphasis to make sure that, you know, the game is fair. The DB still has the right to the ball, just like the offensive receiver. But one thing that we do look for is that creating and pushing off, trying to push that DB away from you so you can make a clean catch. Those are the big ones we need to get as a deep official.
Jason, how much is involved with this with communication with one another out on the field? You might not have seen something, but somebody else did. And the communication now, at one time, official drops a flag, that's it, that's the call. But I see a lot more communication between one another, and now you have somebody kind of watching above, TV-wise, that can also help y'all to facilitate a call out on the field. Because for instant replay, if it's against your team or it's for it, you know what? I just want it right. I think most fans are like that. They just want it right if you're going to have it. So a little bit about the communication with yourself and other officials, and also them giving you information from the sky, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You said the fans just want to get it right. And the number one thing that we as officials, we want to get it right even more so. So, you know, if we have a play – and I say I see a foul, and my partner, who I have to trust, comes up to me, and he's pretty assertive, saying, hey, let's pick this up. I had a better angle. I need to listen to that information because I might have had an angle that maybe I wasn't too sure. I felt it was a foul, but then he had a clear picture. So he needs to come in pretty hard and assertive and tell me, hey, this angle, he did not push him in the back. It was more from the side. I need to take that information and be able to pick that up if we need. And you know, not to get into too much of the mud, but, you know, replay can assist on certain things. There's a rule book of what they can assist us with and what they can't. So we just have to make sure that we follow policy. And as the game goes along, the bottom line is replay is there to help us get things right at the end of the day. Right now, each team has one goal, Mike, and you know what that goal is, right? To get to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. I can tell you each official has one goal also, and that's to get to the Super Bowl just as much as each team. So we're graded every week. At the end of the year, the top guys get to work the postseason, get to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, right now is the off season. Like I mentioned before, you either get better or you stay stagnant. And so there's some younger officials coming up that are going to be better than us. And so if we stay pretty stagnant, we don't do the things that we need to do now, they can easily pass us up. So we definitely got to stay on top of the game.
Jason, I was going to let you go, but I got to ask you this. Are you better with working with a group of, you might want to say, all-star officials, or with a group that you've worked with for a long time and you sort of know how they make calls out on the field? Because there's some good and bad in that. If I haven't worked with you in a while, I'm not sure of what you kind of see, and you're not sure what I see. There is good and bad with that of breaking it up, and I understand giving the top-rated guys the big games, but there also is a negative because you guys work as a team.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of debate in there and some conversation, some good conversation, but each of us is interchangeable. So, you know, I never worked with Carl Johnson on a Sunday. We worked together on a Friday night, but not a Sunday. But I know if I get in a game with Carl, I know his tendencies because I've watched him over the years. And we do know each other. We go to clinics in off season. We go to clinics during the season. So we do have a feel of each other of you know, where we need to be at and who we can trust. But you're right, Mike. As a crew, the crew is the main thing. And so you do get to know your crewmates on a personal level. You get to know the wives and the children. You know their tendencies on the field. You know when you got to go help your crewmate out. You might have had a tough call, so his head may be swimming a little bit, so you might need to go up to him and kind of pull him back in. So we have those things. And yes, as a crew in week 13, you're pretty close. And then when you get to postseason, you're going to be working with new guys. But these guys are all professional. We all want what's best. We want to be the best on the field. So I really don't see that as a big issue from our standpoint that if I work with someone I hadn't worked with before, we're still going to do a great job on the field for those two teams.
Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Man, great stuff. And I know it's not a profession. A lot of people, when they come out of college, say, man, that's what I want to do. But you kind of get drawn to it like you are. And, man, again, thanks so much for telling us your story. Really appreciate it. And congratulations on making it to the NFL.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Appreciate you.
All righty. Jason Ledet does a great job moving himself up. You heard him, former St. Charles Catholic football player, went to Nichols and now refereeing in the National Football League. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody at 520, the legendary Drew Brees will join us right here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.